Hello and welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course Podcast. This video was taken originally off of youtube.com/Hashnasi, that's Hotel Oscar Sierra Hotel, November Alpha Sierra India. I stream every Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, on all topics related to ham radio. Without further ado, let's get started. Ooh, what's up, everybody? Man, we got a lot of people in the chat already. Good evening. Welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course. Thank you so much for joining. A couple of notes as everybody's rolling in. Just wanted to make a note that last week we did APRS on the Baofeng, which was awesome. Had a lot of fun. I hope people have figured out possibly some APRS solutions because I have the radio connected. So if anybody wants to send a message during chat, we will check in to that later. Ooh. Cool. What's up? Evening from Redondo. Man, that's like my backyard. Playing on my pocket operator before the stream here today. Still such a cool little device. Put it around your neck. It's like a little portable synthesizer. All right. Kicking off the Ham Radio Crash Course today, we're going to get back into the general license discussion. Today, though, is on antennas. Lots to talk about antennas. Antennas are one of my most favorite aspects of ham radio, aside from maybe, look at that focus. Come on there. Focus on that beautiful screen. Ah, it keeps getting out of focus. These Logitechs, man, I'm going to have to, there we go. That popped. Somebody got their tech license. The Steel got his tech license. Congratulations. Good evening from Arkansas. Good evening from Missouri. Now we got a lot of people in here tonight. That's awesome. Thank you so much for hopping in. All right. So yeah, I was saying, today we're going to be talking about antennas, and antennas, aside from the cool radios that everybody drools on, antennas kind of take a back seat, but they're probably equally as important, if not the most important thing in your ham shack. Of course, the kids start screaming right now. Of course. Leia just clamped down on Edison. So antennas are super important. If you're going to spend the money and you already got a station, you should always upgrade your antenna. If you're thinking about, hey, I've got this 100-watt radio and I've got money and I want to spend, I'm either going to buy an amp or I'm going to buy an antenna, upgrade your antenna. Always upgrade your antenna. Amps are important. We'll talk about amps in the future, but, you know, very important to make sure you've got your antenna game on point. So let's talk beer because we are doing beer today. I picked up a Mischief Ale. Ooh, look at that green label. Look at that. That's awesome. Mischief Ale by the brewery, which is out of Anaheim. I've been there many times. It's a hoppy Belgian-style ale, so this is going to be somewhat between. It's going to have the hops of a Belgian, but a bitter IPA kind of taste to it. I love that combination. The APRS is clicking off. I haven't got the message tone yet, but I will be listening for that. Oh, Edison. Already having a tough time with this stream tonight. Funny story about Edison when I poured this beer. Yesterday and today were a pretty wild day. We went to Target. My wife had purchased some aluminum metal chairs. And as I was towards the front of the store, Edison just looks at me and just starts projectile vomiting all over the cart and the ground and everywhere. Right at the entrance of Target. So I was like that parent. With the kid that was, you know, like, why did you bring him outdoors? He's not sick. He just threw up. And so then I wake up in the morning, and now my wife's sick. They had some kind of food poisoning thing, Korean food that they ate yesterday. So had to deal with that. So we still made it. So cheers, everybody, for Friday. Mm. All right. So a couple of notes. Moving forward with ham radio, as always. What we're doing. Oh, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Appreciate the dollar. Where's the light? Oh, it's not plugged in. I got a checklist of things that I always do before the stream, and wouldn't you know, I forgot to plug in my party light. Sorry about that, Tom. Let me give it a spin. if you turn it manually, it's like giving it power. Okay, anyway. So moving forward with ham radio, we're always trying to learn a little bit more and then practice what we learn. Move forward, get better, learn the skills to be better operators. There's the super light. It should be going. Sorry about that. So with that said, okay, this is now I want to take a moment and talk about this. I've noticed, and this is good, everybody's really interested in going from tech to general to extra, and they really want to get that extra. And I've been seeing people on the Ham Radio Crash Course. By the way, Ham Radio Crash Course on Facebook, check that out. Also, we've got a Reddit now. Ham Radio Crash Course was set up by Ethan on Reddit, so we've got that. If you don't want to do Facebook, you've got that option too now, which is awesome. So anyway, I appreciate the passion, getting the licenses, getting that done. I appreciate it. It's awesome. My next comment is not taking away from that at all. But think about ham radio like a lifetime hobby. You're going to be in it for a long time. You have time to get better, to build your skills up, to learn CW, to build a great antenna, to build your favorite station. It's not a huge rush. It's a rush, but it's not a huge rush. Is there anybody on that frequency? Let's check. We might be on or next to a frequency that people are talking on. So I'm going to go up 5, okay? We're going up 5. So that's going to be 265. Oh, I've locked it. So we're going to get the frequency on point here. We're going to 265. 265. It's got a touchy dial, this 7300 does. Okay, we're on 265 now. So if anybody wants to try and call out, you can. I'll take the net frequency off there. We're on 14.265 for anybody that wants to try and reach me. Make sure you say something in the chat, though, so I can try. Yeah, you can, Franklin, you can absolutely try on 20. Go for it. Give me the go-ahead when you're going to transmit, though, then I'll turn up the volume because I don't want to blast out my mic. I'm not going to jump around, though. I'm just going to... Ooh. That's tart. Not very bitter. Yeah, I'm not going to jump to 40 right now. I'm just going to stay on 20 meters. My call sign is, it's right there on the screen. Kilo India 6 November Alpha Zulu dash 7 is what you want to message me if you want to send me an APRS, by the way. Which I haven't heard any beeps or anything like that, or message beep. So, cool. Oh, he's transmitting now. Ooh. I don't hear you, bud. It's still light out, though. Maybe we can get that gray time going, or that gray line. We'll try again. Okay, cool. All right, so think about your plans with ham radio over the long term. Think about how you're going to get better with ham radio over time. It's not a race. I support getting all your licenses, though. I support doing that right up front because that's going to give you the ability to access those frequencies and access those extra spaces. So absolutely. 100 watts and a wire, probably no good. Maybe. This is probably the wrong time to do it. You got to be a little bit more tactical in the way you go about trying to make QSOs when you're on 100 watts in a wire. Maybe when that gray line's coming over California, that's when you want to give it a shot. Yeah, the dash 7 is only for the APRS folks that are trying to hit me. Don't use the dash 7 if you're trying to call me. I don't know why that's kipping off. Anyway, okay. Another shout out. We'll be doing this for the rest of the month as field day's coming up. Dakota Digital Lithium sent me this battery to use on field day, and they've got a coupon code for anybody that wants to buy one. Just use Hoshnasi when you check out and you get a discount. So DakotaLithiumBattery.com. If you're going in the field, this is a really lightweight, nice battery, and it's a 10 amp hour and 12 volt power, which is awesome. You can run just about any QRP rig on this for hours and hours and hours. So keep that in mind if you're going to go do something outdoors with ham radio for field day. Okay. Live Discord chat is going to be after the stream, as always. I already posted the link, but I will do it again right now. There it is. Discord link. Okay. So what are we talking about today? Well, antennas, right? We love antennas. The book, the ARRL book, is actually pretty good regarding antennas. So we're just going to use the book for some notes here. Let's dive into that right now. All right. Oh, you know what? We should do this beforehand. I do want to point this out. Going back to the crash course here, I want to give a shout out. Ooh, what's going on here? Oh, man, my computer just got real slow. That's not what I want. Wow, sorry about that. I don't know what's going on. I'm having a hard time with the Facebook right now. Oh, here we go. There it is. So we got a really cool post on the Ham Radio Crash Course. This is a post about getting out and doing radio. Mike Roberts posted a really cool story about him going to CPAC, and you can read the whole story on the Facebook page, but he says he was out there for a couple of days, met a lot of ham radio operators. They got to work single sideband and QRP FT8 right there. On the beach next to the fire, next to the bonfire. Super cool. So wanted to mention that. And then lastly, Dave Egerton passed away. Most of you don't know who he is. I didn't either until the person reached out to me. I think one of his relatives on YouTube. Basically, Dave is the reason why we have email over HF or satellite email. Dave came up with the concept using a Motorola radio and the Inmarsat terminal to basically figure out how to transmit email. And he was there during, there's an explosion there. So I wanted to give the shout out. It was nice of them to say, hey, you know, he passed and the importance of him. Inventor of satellite email. Cool. So there we go. All right. Let's get that chat above the fold here. There we go. Cool. All right. Camera is flipping out. This is great. Okay. So antennas. The importance of antennas is not understated. But in this chapter, we're basically going to cover the basics. And when we go through the questions at the end, we're going to cover a lot of them too. So basically, the way to look at this is your antenna has elements, right? Whether it's a vertical or it's a dipole or it's a beam that has pieces coming off of a boom. The idea is the elements are the conductive portion of an antenna that radiate or receive signal. Polarization refers to the orientation of the electric field. Okay, makes sense. Feed point impedance, which is really important, and we're going to talk a lot about that, but I'll get it covered somewhat right in the beginning. Feed point impedance is the ratio of RF voltage to current at the antenna's feed point. An antenna is resonant, which means resonant implies that it is capable of transmitting RF. Resonance when the feed point impedance is completely resistive with no reactance. Okay, so that basically means the antenna has nothing coming back at it. All the power is going out of the antenna. It's in tune, if you will, is a simple way of thinking about that. Okay, Franklin, go for it. He wants to try and hit me on 20 meters. Shoot. I don't hear you, buddy. Oh! You're there, but I can't pick you out. You're definitely there. You're making it, but it's just not a good copy. Let's try later. Go check on a world map like a PSK reporter and see where the gray line is. Go look at the gray line. And when the gray line's over Southern California, let me know. In fact, let me check. Nope, still really bright outside. don't try yet. Let's try when I'm on the gray line. So it says somebody tried Hoshnasi on the coupon code and it didn't work. So I will message Dakota after this stream. But also, if you want to, you can message them. They may answer to you before this whole thing's over. So, man. And zoom in on the book, please. Okay, somebody has a suggestion. With the book, kill the... it doesn't work that way because then it'll just blow out all of us, right? I can try. Let's try. Why not? That's part of the reason it's there. So, okay, propagation's gone. Now here's what's going to happen. I'm going to zoom in. And... hey! Okay, that's not a bad... all right, I'll take your comment. All right, your comment's good. So, good comment. Let me zoom in a little bit more or steady the focus. Cool. All right. So, dipoles, the chapter begins with dipoles because dipoles are the simplest antenna to understand. If you understand coax, you can understand a dipole. Coax has a center conductor and then a shielded ground on the outside or a shield return on the outside. If you separate those two and you give them length that we'll talk about specific lengths, you've made a dipole. That will become a resonant antenna, okay? So what it's showing here, this is the radiation pattern of a dipole located in free space. So we talked about this in the technician videos, that antenna charts basically are showing you how an antenna will radiate in this perfect space bubble. And that's what this is showing. A dipole, and so the way dipoles work, these are the wires. So if this is your center conductor, so your coax center conductor, excuse me, gassy beer, and you got wires coming out of the side like that, the radiation is coming off the horizontal side of the dipole, okay? And it's like a big donut, okay? That's what this is, big donut, right? It's big figure eight circular donut is the radiation pattern of a dipole with horizontal legs. It'll come up later in the video and we talk a little bit more when we get to the questions, but an inverted V dipole, which is how a lot of people use dipoles, if it's a sloper like this, then you're gonna treat more like an omnidirectional and have a different radiation pattern. So. Basically, point here is a couple of questions. We already covered the figure eight. Impedance increases as the feed point is moved away from the center and is several thousand ohms at the end. So as you move it off center, you get more of impedance. Okay. Here's the most important thing you need to know, and this number is going to be used, and derivatives of this number, fractions of this number is going to be used through the rest of the video and when we talk about antennas. If you take in free space, 1/2 wavelength in feet equals 492 divided by frequency in megahertz. Dipoles are usually half wave. Remember when we did the KG6 HQD dipole on stream? That 492 number divided by the megahertz we wanted to operate on gave us the length in feet that we wanted to cut the antenna legs to, okay? Or, sorry, the full length, which you then cut in half, okay? All right, we can skip most of this. Let's talk the example here. What is the appropriate length in feet of a 1/2 wave dipole for 14,250? What are we on? 14,265. But perfect, this 20 meters. We're basically building a dipole. 495 divided by 14,250 is 34.5 feet. Perfect, okay? So hopefully that makes sense. That's a half wave, right? So you can cut that in half again, and then you've got a quarter on each side giving you a half wave dipole, right? You cut the wires half and half of the core of the half wave. Okay. Here's something I'll admit to not knowing when I was a technician. Ground planes are verticals. Verticals are ground planes. A vertical is just a dipole with half of it cut off. Your radiating element is the vertical portion, and the other portion is your ground, right? It's using the ground and the radials you put out as the other half of the dipole. Now, HF ground planes are mounted at the ground level, obviously, or you create a ground level based off of other things you can do to manipulate. But for simplicity's sake, here is an image that covers it perfectly. If this is your feed point, this is a half-wave dipole, this is your radiating lead, this would be the other half, right? Well, you're just going to have the ground here. This is your conductive ground plane, and there's no actual line here. But the image, they call electrical image, is what you're going to see, basically, the radio believes there to be. Quick comment. It's Swifty says, DX Maps is showing lots of contacts across NA on 20 meters. Yeah, 20 meters in the daytime is great. Even at dusk, it's fine. 20 meters propagates really well, so there's a lot of times that there'll be activity. As it starts getting darker, though, people are going to go to 40 meters, and it's going to be a little bit more, I don't know, they're going to be more action on 40 meters and the lower bands at that point, 60, 80, 75, et cetera. So, all right. So it brings up verticals because one of the primary uses of verticals is in mobile applications. Some of you who've already got your technicians, you're probably thinking about a mobile antenna, and a good mobile antenna is a vertical, like a whip or something to do with that. And that's what a lot of people use in mobile. A full-size quarter-wave mobile whip is not feasible on HF bands below 10 meters, so loading techniques are required. We're talking about loading right now. Let me read this really quick. Most popular mobile antennas by far the whip. Steel-mounted rod mounted over the conductive surface of the vehicle, giving omnidirection coverage. Okay, so now they're talking about loading. Oops, sorry about that. Okay. Physically small antennas, loading techniques. It's going to come up later. But basically, well, let me scroll this down. There you go. So you can't, again, think about the band you're on, 40 meters, for example. It's 40 meters, right? One quarter wave of 40 meters or half wave, right? That's 20 meters. That's 50 feet, right, of wire, potentially, right? So it's not really feasible to have a 25-foot vertical wire sticking off your car. In some cases it is. Maybe your camper if you're not driving anywhere. So what they'll do is, and you'll see this even on 2-meter antennas, they'll add coils that are physically the length. They're getting that length, but they're reducing it physically. They're physically compressing it. So you'll see HF mobile antennas that have wire closely wrapped and bunched around it. In fact, I'll grab my ham stick in a little bit, but we still have a while until the green line. Yep. Yes, Franklin. Let me know when you think the ground line is and or the gray line, and then we'll try again. I'll focus on this, though. But I do want to try to get you. I know we tried earlier, too, so thank you. I'm trying on a new telescoping gooseneck thing for this camera, so it's working real pretty well so far. I like it. Hopefully you guys like it, too. Let me see if I can get this a little bit flatter. Okay. All right. So that was verticals. Verticals are half of a dipole. Bottom is the ground. You'll often need a lot of ground wires called radials that are used to help create that ground plane that then functions as that electrical image that we showed on the other screen. I use verticals. I use verticals for soda. They work fine. I haven't put up anything that's higher power than that, though. And even that one used toroids to reduce the length of the vertical. It was a match on 20, quarter wave 20. It was about 17 feet vertical, but not for 30 or 40. You had to add length to the wire, and that's what that kit did, the QRP guy's kit. Nicholas Fernandez says, hey. Hey, back at you. Okay, so random wires. So this is we're going to spend a little bit of time here because a lot of people are going to, when they first get into HF, I did as well. Oh, my field day pin's getting all funky. Spend a lot of time with random wires. Random wires are great. They're functional. They will work. Kind of tricky in some cases. And this book actually doesn't do a good job. It actually does something that's borderline dangerous, which we'll talk about. But anyway, random wires imply literally a random chunk of wire. It may not be resonant on a given frequency. In fact, a lot of the times when you use a random wire, they're cut to not be resonant on any one frequency because the antenna, the radio will then want to work on that frequency and it can cause problems. So what a lot of people will do with a random wire is they'll attach a tuner to it. And the tuner, in conjunction with the radio, will allow them to put some matter of RF out on that random wire line, okay? I'm going to read this because I think it's important, particularly because it's also one of the things that, one of the antennas that a lot of people go to when they first start an HF. So, it's not always practical to have a half-length or quarter-length wave long resonant antenna for portable operations and in other special circumstances. A random wire antenna can be used. The antenna is just what the name suggests, a random length of wire deployed however possible. Throw it over a tree limb. I love that. I have done sloping across the gutters, you know, like the so there's a gutter on the outer eave, and then there's like the downspout that goes to the side of the house. I've looped it on that little run between the downspout. I've done that with random wire. You'd be surprised. You're actually gonna be able. So there's perfection in radio, like really taking the time and really being precise and really just getting every little bit of blood out of that stone. And then there's just getting an antenna up on the air and operating. And you'll be surprised that you can get a lot done with just putting an antenna up. So always move forward with radio. Do something. Try it. Put the antenna up. You'll learn something. Even if it's the wrong thing to do, try it. You're always better off for it. And I'm an engineer. I'm a very, like, type of guy who will experiment and try things to figure out, you know, what works, what doesn't work for future knowledge, whatever. So just get out there and do it. So keep that in mind. All right. So here's where it gets a little wonky. The antenna is just as the name suggests, a random length of wire deployed however possible. The feed point impedance and radiation pattern of a random wire are unpredictable. Makes sense because they're not cut. You know, you don't know. And usually, now what the book says is, I take a bit of umbrage with this, but we'll talk about it. They're saying that usually a random wire is connected right into the back of the transceiver, which it can be sometimes. That just goes back to my whole radial discussion. You know, I've talked about those little BNC splitters, right, with the doublet, with the two wires coming out of it that you put into the BNC splitter. Well, you still have to have the counterpoise. Counterpoise being the driven angle of a dipole and then the counterpoise. You still have to have that. So the radio is going to have a counterpoise hanging off of it for random wire. Sometimes they go directly into a radio, sometimes they don't. Okay? The feed point impedance and radiation pattern of a random wire antenna are unpredictable. Got it. A true random wire is connected directly to the output of the transmitter, more commonly to the output of the antenna tuner, right? As we've covered. Here we go. The station equipment and its ground connections are thus part of the antenna system as well. Using this type of an antenna may result in significant RF currents and voltages on the station equipment and can cause RF burns. That is a question in the test. So I don't think they're advocating for that. I don't think that's what they're doing here. I think they're trying to explain that this can totally happen and does happen. So generally, the tuner will help knock some of that down. Station grounding would be important at that point. That's a kind of a weird question to have in the test, I think. And of course, there's the errata. I'm sure Tom's already typing it. I can count to five, and I bet you Tom's going to say, check the errata. There might be errata. There might be. But still, it's kind of an interesting point to make. But it can happen. So, oh, really? Somebody is testing 1232 on 625. Well, let's hear. Is there a lid? I don't know. Maybe it's my friendly troll that has been commenting. Okay. Yagi antennas. Yagi antennas are beam antennas. They're the ones you see on the big pole with the ones that look like TV antennas, but they're perpendicular to the beam or the boom, right? The boom is the part that the elements connect to, and they're perpendicular to that. And they're usually really big, really long. Okay. The book makes a note here that I also take a bit of umbrage with. For combination of economy, I highlighted economy, performance and simplicity, it's hard to beat the Yagi antenna. So if you're talking about my satellite, you know, 2-meter antenna that I built off of a tape measure, yeah, economy for sure. But when he's talking about HF, Yagi antennas are really expensive. So is the equipment to get it up on the air. Your antenna mast, for example, they're pretty expensive. So I don't know. Oh, Hunter's asking if he got my message. Let's see. It's a bit before I wanted to check, but we will check right now. I do not have it, Hunter. And I've got my radio connected to my really nice antenna. So we may just need to wait for the recycles. So here's what a Yagi... Nope, that's not it. We're going to talk about how Yagis work. So Yagis have multiple elements, right? They've got... now we're talking about Yagis, not a driven... A driven antenna is a bit different, but there's basically two kinds. There's a Yagi and then there's the driven, directed, non-parasitic, driven antenna, okay? We'll talk about that in a second, too. All right. So how Yagis work, you have multiple, they use these circles to explain signals, okay? If this is the point, the horizontal lines of the antenna, and you have them pointed along this path with the boom, what happens is you have one line of the antenna. I don't actually know why it does it this way. This is the wrong way of doing it. We're going to go back to this one. So go back to the concept of a dipole, right? You have one driven angle and one counterpoise, right? You got your center post bent over and you got your ground wire bent over. Guess what? That's a Yagi. It just requires a bit more parasitic pieces in the chain to give you directionality and gain. So this is the way to think about a Yagi. So here's your driven element, right? Here's one leg and here's the other leg. In the back is something called a reflector. It's the longest pole, the longest horizontal piece in a Yagi. In front of the reflector, and it's always usually the furthest in the back, in front of the reflector is your driven element. That's where your dipole is. And then in front of those, progressively smaller pieces are aligned and they're called directors. So what happens, the reflector is the widest, it receives some of that dipole energy. And remember, dipole radiates in a figure eight coming off of the horizontal perpendicular face of the dipole. So dipoles are pointable if they're aligned horizontally. The reflector is receiving that energy, bouncing it forward, and then it gets focused with the directors as they progressively get smaller. That's how Yagis work. Only the second rearest elements are the driven portions, where your radio is actually radiating. Everything else is parasitic, but causes a focus-like beam. Well, what's happening is the outbound to the reflector energy is slowed down in time because it has to bounce back, and it creates a circle. And then you have a director in front, that creates a circle, another director, that creates a circle, another director, that creates a circle. Now I can go back a page. All right. So what happens, these circles get all out of focus, out of phase, right? Because timing is different. What happens is where the circles overlap, you get a cancel. The RF cancels it out. It's a null. Where they line up and cross all together right here, it adds signal. It adds gain, forward gain. And that looks like this guy. Okay? So here's your signal cancels are these dead spots. So we're looking directly down onto the antenna, right? That's what this circle is. So these dips in this space here are all the nulls on the antenna, where there is no directionality. The other lobes are where you're pushing out the RF, okay? So that's how Yagis basically work. They're using a series of parasitic rods to create directionality, to create gain. They're great. I want one. In fact, I should actually mention that. I'm looking to put an antenna with some gain on my roof. I was looking at Yagis, but I think I'm going to go with a hex beam. If there's anybody watching that has any recommendations, post in the comments if you've worked with HF directional antennas and you've liked what you've installed on your roof, because I am going to install one. Yes. So Wicked Perfect says, I'm not an antenna engineer, but is that constructive and destructive interference? Yeah, that would be a good way of explaining it. Joe Wilson, I am using the General Class License Manual by the ARRL. If you want a quick link to it, it's in the description in my Amazon store. All right, so it's important to understand now that all these, so you've got dipoles, you've got Yagis, you've got random wires, you've got loops. We haven't talked about loops yet, but loops, in fact, did we skip loops? Ah, there's loops. Not much to say about loops other than, well, wait, no, there might be stuff to say about loops. Yeah, I skipped the whole thing. Good. I'm glad I went back. So loops are basically two dipoles that are connected at the ends to create a circle. They are connected at the feed point, but they go all the way around. They're like two dipoles, right? And so they create this dual figure eight type radiation pattern, okay? Loops can be horizontally mounted. All horizontally mounted loops are horizontally polarized. Vertically oriented loops, not always vertically polarized. It depends on where the feed point is. And there's an image for that which sums it up pretty nicely. Loops are pretty nice, and I recommend them for people that have apartments, people that are on the go a lot, get in the field. Loops are great. Loops are economical, and you can even make loops for frequencies up in 80 meters. I talked to a guy at the ham radio outlet in Anaheim. He has a loop at home. He loves it. It's horizontal 80-meter loop that goes around his property. Kills it, he says, on FT8. And you can do all the rag shoe frequencies, all kinds of stuff. So a couple of things, loops. The driven element of a quad, those are loops that are mounted together. Quad and delta loop reflectors are 5% circumference. We'll cover that when we get to the questions. Front and back ratio is generally better for Yagi. Okay. All right, here's a good way to look at this. So horizontally polarized feed point, high current going in one direction. This is vertically polarized, and its feed point change. So if you're fed from the bottom, horizontally polarized. If you're fed from the side, then you get a vertical polarization because you're changing the RF current. Okay. Original oriented horizontal. I already covered that. Specialized antennas. All right, NVIS. Somebody asked me about NVIS in the Discord. NVIS antenna stands for near vertical incidence sky wave. And the book says it, fancy way of saying signals that go straight up. So basically, it's really easy to explain this with a dipole. Dipoles, we just talked about half-wave antennas, half-wavelength for a dipole. Well, dipoles want to be at least half-wave above the ground. So you get the full length of the wave out of the antenna. So getting it up off the ground will give you better propagation. Well, what if you want less propagation? Maybe NVIS. And what NVIS is waves that go almost vertical and then come directly back down. Come down at high RF power, come back down in pretty strong RF power. NVIS is the antennas that are most often used during emergency communications, emergency comms, because they're consistent and you're applying a lot of power in your coverage area, which is, you know, hundreds of miles versus thousands of miles. So all you have to do for that is really lower the height of a dipole. So a dozen feet off the ground for a 20-meter dipole, for example, will give you NVIS coverage. And there's different ways to check it, but that's in a nutshell. I get a lot of questions right now, so let's take a pause. Let's take a pause and actually go through the questions. I don't want to miss anything. FanTV asks, would it be worth it to make a dipole for a Baofeng for use in my apartment? Sure, but 2 meters and 70 centimeter dipoles are not very big. I would instead recommend you make like a J-pole or an Edfong J-pole or what's a Slim Jim. Slim Jim antenna with a window wire or TV line would be perfect. Those are center feed balanced line fed antenna. Basically, you're going to take the plastic double feed or the balanced line. You're going to cap over the edge, cap over the bottom, and then you're going to snip it at a precise location. If you look up J-pole calculator or Slim Jim calculator more specifically, it'll tell you exactly where your measurements need to be. Okay, question. Yagi reminds me of LRAD, the riot control sound laser. Nice. Patrick Dickey, I wonder if I could mount that on my ceiling. Josh, do you work DMR and have you been on Bridge 3100? If you do get, I'd love to chat with you about antenna design. I have DMR, have it, but have not been using it. I've been using a lot of Fusion because I picked up that FT2DR, which I've absolutely loved. I am trying to get ready, though, for field day. So I'm going to probably have to get through June before I get back to DMR. That's just my hunch right now because I really need to focus on my CW and getting everything laid out because I want to produce some videos for the equipment I'm using. Like I think next standalone video is going to be about my power, solar panel, batteries, what I'm going to do to power my radio, my equipment. Franklin Lewis says, I just purchased a 20-meter Mosley tri-band Yagi. I have a 43-foot tower, and I'm looking for a rotator for the whole setup to come together. Yeah, that's great. That's exactly what we're talking about. So that's awesome. Now, if you don't mind, you don't have to, but what did you spend? I'm curious. So you, just for the antenna, if you know how much the tower was, 43-foot, that'd be cool too. But I don't want to put you on the spot. If you don't want to tell, that's okay too. Kyle Craig says, once you get your general ticket, an NVIS is great to deploy to participate in your local state QSO party. Yes. Yes. QSO party is, a couple times a year. They do a statewide QSO party where you try to make QSOs with people in the state, and some people try to make QSOs from outside the state into said state. And it has its own logging system. It's very cool. And that's its own thing right there. So that's awesome. Franklin Joe Wilson says, Franklin try got okay. Just upgraded to Extra today. Seth says, just upgraded to Extra today. Watched one of your videos when I was looking into my tech. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. And that's awesome that you got to Extra. That's extra special. I hope you're on the Ham Radio Crash Course. And post it there. People will give you a big congratulations. DJ Schnibbs, my buddy, Hosh, is C4FM and System Fusion the same thing? System Fusion uses C4FM. That is my understanding, yes. And it has other components to it, and I'm sure it's all over. It uses C4FM to exchange data, but it does things like pictures and other stuff too. C4FM, yeah, C4FM are the same thing. Franklin Lewis, I bought it for $100. Where did you get that? Was that a used thing? That's awesome. Man, that's awesome. Okay, NVIS, covered NVIS. You know what? I'm just realizing now I'm not a big fan of that beer. It's got kind of a skunky taste to it. It's not bitter. It's got a sour bit that I'm not a big fan of. So I'll make a note of this since we just talked about Franklin getting a Yagi. There's other things called horizontally stacked and horizontal boom, horizontal stack. These all add gain in different ways and add directionality to your signal. With a vertical stack, you're basically applying your same RF to the two stacks and they work in conjunction to each other. It can help, gives you a little bit more gain. Very good. Log periodics, though. A log periodic, and in fact, do they have a picture? So log periodics are basically Yagis that have many, many elements, and they're all kind of like you could turn them sideways and you can see the taper all the way down them. They look like TV antennas, but they have way more elements to them. And they are, if you see them in VHF, UHF, they usually have like a ton, like 30 or more radiating units. So log periodic is kind of its own special thing. Does it say anything other than that? Logarithmic, periodic, spacing of elements along the boom, yes. Short elements are active at high frequencies and long elements at low frequencies. The elements are approximately. So it gives you kind of a wide bandwidth antenna that can be used across an entire band right now. QSO on 14265, someone says. It's Swift. I can't hear them. Periodic antenna can be a good choice if only one rotatable antenna can be installed for several bands. So, yeah, multiple bands of support via one antenna. But not a, it's still a compromise. Take it easy, Hunter. See ya. Okay, beverage antenna is an interesting one. So beverage antenna, and you need the picture to really understand it. Beverage antenna is a high noise reduction antenna. It doesn't hear more, it just rejects more noise. It uses a long wire with a ground rod and then another ground rod to a feed point. And it's a very good receiving antenna. It absolutely creates no gain, though. It's not for transmitting. It's purely a receive antenna, but it's a good receive antenna. So some people that have, and this is a thing, you may have a radio in HF that has two inputs, And it would be perfect to use one of those inputs for receiving, to have a receiving antenna, like a beverage. You know, you can try all kinds of different things. I've never used a beverage. I've just memorized the questions I needed to know for a beverage, and I know what they look like. But that's it. Okay. So we started talking about compromise antennas a bit. A compromise antenna, all antennas are kind of a compromise for different reasons. Unless you're building like just a monoband dipole, they all have some bit of loss incurred to try and either support multiple bands or other things like that. Enter multiband antennas. Multiband antennas are usually a compromise between supporting multiple bands. For instance, that's what this is right here. That's what this is showing. This is a 10 meter, 15 meter, and 20 meter resonant antenna. And what it's using are these things called traps. So the antenna on my roof has traps. It makes it much shorter, but physically it's the same amount of wire that allows me to operate on 20, 15, 40, 80, etc. The traps are basically like resistors in some cases, and let's just go with the resistors for right now. Basically what happens is at different points, at different cuts of length, the antenna is resonant on that cut. So your wires out here to the first trap, that's 10 meters. From your second trap through to the from the first trap through it, so it's become resonant, it's resonantly useful on 15 meters. When it gets to that second trap, it cuts out. So it's exactly the length of material, of wire needed to be resonant on that frequency. Traps are, they're non-powered. They're just dumb, you know, spools of coil wire on there. But they act like a cutoff switch, like a physical cutoff switch that stops the antenna from being resonant or using more of that wire. The downside of that, though, is you're obviously not a fully stretched out wire, a perfect monoband, so you're going to get some losses incurred from that. But you gain the ability to have multiple bands in support. Yeah, the beverage antenna was created by a guy named Beverage, oddly enough. So, all right, feed lines. Here are all the feed lines that you'll common see. You know coax? No, that's a double shield coax. Single shield coax. This is the one you'll, you know, most of your 50 ohm stuff is all this. 50 ohms is standard feed line impedance for coax. When you get to balanced lines, they're 300 ohm. 75 ohm, 450 ohm. So you generally have to match down to your equipment. Radios generally want 50 ohms. So what you'll find is things for like dipoles and Yagis, they feed to coax. So they either have to step down or step up their ohm feed line balance to 50 ohms, or you have to use a device to do that. A lot of people will recommend you have a tuner right at that feed point to balance whatever it is to get it to the right match for your feed line. Or you can do things to the antenna to make it the right feed line match. For example, Yagis are like 12 ohms in some cases, and they'll use a delta match. It's a physical device that adds a bit of wire to the radiating element, and that adds impedance. Yeah, of course, it's in ohms. It adds impedance to your driven element. So, okay. Then it matches to your coax, which is where you're going to be anyway, because that's going to go in the back of the your radio. All right. So all of this stuff, antennas, right, you're going to connect your radio to it, whether it's a dipole, a Yagi, a vertical, ground plane, whatever. It needs to be cut specifically for that frequency you're going to operate on, or it's going to have a trap, the coil of wire that will help it be resonant on multiple frequencies, etc. You measure that by your forward and reflected power, and it's called SWR, standing wave ratio. So there's a lot of math, well, not a lot of math, but it's pretty simple, actually. Where is my, forward reflected power? SWR is equal to the ratio of the higher of the antenna feed point impedance or feed line characteristic impedance, then lower. That means a ratio is always greater. Okay, so a 1-to-1 is a perfect match. So we just mentioned feed line. What if you had a 300 ohm feed line impedance into your 50 ohm coax? Well, you divide those two. Well, let's just use 200 because I've already got it here. 200 is your feed line impedance into your 50 ohm coax that goes to your radio, your transceiver. That's a 4-to-1 match. If it's 50 to 10, that's 5-to-1 match. If it's 50 and 50, boom, that's a 1-to-1. That's what you want. What that means is that there's no resistive impedance along that line. You're pushing all of your RF energy out into the antenna, and you're vibrating the air particles, sending it at the speed of light. So that's why we match antennas. We want to put as much power out as possible. What if it doesn't match? Well, then you have a mismatch, and you have to have a mismatch because you're never going to have a perfect match. You're never going to have a 1-to-1 match. There always will be a mismatch. Some of that power is reflected back via the feed line and back into your transceiver. In some cases, the tuner soaks that up, and there's other ways to deal with that. So case in point, I mean, we can talk about, we're going to get to that right now, but the ICOM 7300 has a built-in tuner. It'll handle up to a feed point mismatch of 3-to-1. So a 3-to-1 mismatch, however fractionally you want to do that, 300 and 100, right, 30 and 10, 3-to-1 match. Any more than that, and you need a tuner. Well, what would you need a tuner for? A 4-to-1, a 5-to-1, a 6-to-1? Any of these mismatches would require an antenna tuner. Hopefully this is making sense. Ask a question if it's not. Oh, Joe's got it. I thought I maybe didn't cover the trap well enough. Patrick asked, silly question, do you take the traps off or want when you want to work a lower frequency? Yeah, sorry. Or does it just power through them? Yeah. So, Joe, hopefully Joe answered the question. So Patrick's asking, do you have to take the traps off? No. They're permanently wired into the antenna. What happens is when that straight line, which is resonating on 10 meters, hits the trap, it stops. Because at that point, at that cut point, that's the resonant point for that antenna on 10 meters, and it stops. When you want to do 15 meters, it's going to hit that point, and it's going to power through all those loops, and then it's going to hit that flat line, straight wire, boom, it's going to hit that last trap, and it's going to stop because that's the 20-meter trap, or whatever, 15-meter trap. So that's exactly what that is. So without getting too Carl asks, Carl, we covered tuners a bit in the electric components video, but in an essence, the antenna tuner is going to match your transmitter impedance, feed line impedance, to the antenna feed line impedance. It's going to match the two. It goes in between your transceiver and your antenna. So if we go back to your ratios here, when you have a 4-to-1 match, the tuner is going to step into it, and it's going to try and drop the 4 to a 1 and get the 1 to match it, right? And what usually happens, I did a video on my MFJ, what is it, 993B, the tuner tries to get it to a 1.5-to-1 match, which is still a good match, and then that's it. Now, we will talk about tuners right now. Impedance matching. It's like we're purposely doing. How are we doing on time? Oh, wow, we're bowling through the time. Sorry about that. We're almost done. All right, matching the feed line and load antenna impedances eliminates the standing wave from reflected power and maximizes power delivered to the load. I just covered this, right? You want the most RF going down that feed line. You need a tune. You need a tuner. And you need to tune your antenna to do that. If you have a multiband antenna, you need a tuner. Or you can try and play some games there, but it doesn't work out that well. The device used to reduce the SWR at the transmitter connection to the feed line has many names: impedance matcher, transmatch, antenna coupler, antenna tuner. How it works: antenna tuner does not tune the antenna at all. It doesn't do anything to the antenna. It doesn't change the length of it. It doesn't change its radiation pattern. It doesn't do anything other than change the impedance of your antenna system at the end of the feed line to match that of your transmitter. Its job is to just match the impedance. Because what will happen is if your impedance is too high, your radio simply will not transmit. Or on some older radios, it will transmit, get really hot, You could damage things. You could put a bunch of RF into your shack. You get RF burns. All that stuff happens when you have a massive feed point mismatch with your antenna, which is that whole random wire thing that they mentioned earlier. A random wire massive mismatch will cause RF burns. Raymond Spark says, Hosh, speaking of tuners, you said your new tuner could tune a lawn chair. I would enjoy seeing your attempt that. You're probably like the 10th person who's mentioned that. And I'm thinking about doing it. I really am. I think I'd have to run it like a vertical and have a bunch of radials, like ground radials. And I guess I could just mount. I have to think about it. I think get me through June, get me through field day, and we might talk about that. So anyway, here's a nice simple diagram. Transmitter, impedance matcher, tuner, feed line antenna. Covered that, but you know, pictures are worth 1,000 words. So I think that's it for the chapter. Chapter's pretty straightforward, right? And antennas are great. But don't spend too much time worrying about antennas. Just two lawn chairs and make a dipole. You know what? I think you're right. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I think I'm going to get two lawn chairs and I'm going to... MFJ is going to be, what are you doing, buddy? We're not going to put you on any of our websites. They actually did post, I think, one of my reviews on their website. Oh, come on, buddy. We got to go airplane mode here. All right. So let's switch over here. There it is. Okay. You know what? Let me turn this sideways. Bladow. Why don't we go ahead and also hide the propagation here? It's like I'm taking your comments to heart. In fact, I think I can go down here with that. Doing it live. Doing it live. It's always a good idea to do things live. And the chat, because you're transparent, you just hop right above there. Look at that. Beauty. All right. So we're only going to look at the antenna questions, which I think is good. We should just focus on those, right? All right. Which of the following characteristics determine the characteristic impedance of a parallel conductor antenna feed line? The distance between the centers of the conductors and the radius of the conductors. The distance between the centers of the conductors and the length of the line. The radius of the conductors and the frequency of the signal, the frequency of the signal, and the length of the line. Parallel conductor, right? TV line, balanced line. What determine the characteristic impedance? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's A. Carl, take it easy, man. Thanks for watching, bud. All right, A. It's A. So what it's saying is my lamp cord. Right? Lamp cord. Whoop! They're right next to each other. The impedance would be lower. As you start to separate the two, its impedance gets higher. And the thickness, the diameter of the material also affects impedance. What are the typical characteristic impedances of coax cable used for antenna feed lines at amateur stations? So you can just omit almost all of them. 25, 30, we know that's not true. 80 and 100, no. 575 is huge. It's 50 and 75. Come on. There we go. Tuned up baseball. What was that? Patrick says, so the tuner just fools the radio into thinking it's perfect. Yes! Yes, you got it. The tuner just fools the radio into thinking the antenna is perfect. It doesn't do anything other than that. That's what tuners do. That's needed for multiband antennas, but if you're making a dipole, just a monoband dipole, cut that thing right. Cut it right and make it right. All right. Hey, Carrie's here. Carrie, you made it. Thank you. I saw your post doing your nets. I hope those worked out well for you. That's awesome. All right, keeping going. What's the character impedance of a flat ribbon TV type twin lead? I believe it's 100 ohms. Nope, it's 75. Nope, 300? Oh, wow. Oh, Franklin. Oh, wow, Franklin. Thank you so much. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. So I was totally wrong on that. So, okay. TV twin lead, 300 ohms. That makes sense. 300 ohms. Commit that to memory. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. I really do. What might cause reflected power at the feed point where a feed line connects to an antenna? Using more transmitter power than the antenna can handle, operating an antenna at its resonant frequency, a difference between feed line impedance and the antenna feed point impedance, feeding the antenna with unbalanced line. A, B, and D are all things that you will experience. Those are all things of radio DOM, so you can just omit them, go straight to C. How does the attenuation of coax cable change as the frequency of the signal it is carrying increases? Attenuation is independent of frequency. Attenuation increases. Attenuation decreases. Attenuation reaches a maximum of approximately 18 megahertz. I don't remember this. Now's a good time for me to pour myself more beer, and hopefully somebody answers in the chat for free internet points. The slow pour and the kids yell in the background. Never, Edison. Never, Edison. Never, ever do. Well, he's feeling better, so that's good. That's very good. Elijah, what do you think the best portable HF antenna is for backpacking? Whoo! All right, somebody said increases. We're going to go with it. Increases. Yes! You're right. It's Swift. 10 internet points. So to answer the question Elijah asked, what do you think the best portable HF antenna is for backpacking? The one you have with you. Ba-dum-ching! No. A wire that you throw into a tree, either with a 9-to-1 balun, which is called an unbalanced balun, 9-to-1 balun, would be fine. Just a wire cut to the frequency that you want, say 20 meters, like for soda. You don't need anything more than 20 meters, really. Throw that over a tree. Have a BNC split out box. Put one into one lead there. Put the other lead into a ground radial. Use that. Boom. That's all you need. Yeah, I mean, I've used my last two sodas were with a vertical antenna, 17-foot vertical antenna with four ground radials. I've used my MFJ Big Ears, which is too big, but perfect. Man, it's a great mobile antenna. It's a really nice mobile antenna to have because it is very effective. It's very good receiver. Simple dipole. The Jerry dipole would be fine. Totally fine, and it's cheap. That's the cheapest of all the options, I think, other than a random wire and some BNC cables. But you could totally do that. Like, literally. Okay, let me... You know what? I wasn't planning on answering this question, but I'll find that BNC connector, and I'll put it in my Amazon store, and it'll be under soda. It's a BNC barrel bayonet connector into your radio, and it's got a red post and a black post, and you put one antenna cable here and another antenna cable here, and you cinch them down, you're done. So what you do is you go online, you use that calculation that we talked about earlier. You get the length. So you figure out what you want to operate in megahertz. Like I'm on 14.265, which is a perfectly good frequency if you want to do soda on single sideband. Divide that by the number. It's 492 or something like that. Divide that by the number. Gives you the feet. Cut that thing. Right? Cut it the full length. Cut the full length. Put that into a wire wrap and then figure out what the counterpoise is. I don't know what the counterpoise is. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be equal length. It's going to be less than that to a certain degree. I'll have to look at the handbook. I'm not positive, but I think it's like 292. I think you divide the frequency by. No. No, it's not. It has to be shorter. Radials are usually much shorter. Google random wire radial ground radial calculator, or look or what the math is for that. And basically, you're going to cut a ground radial. Ground radial goes to the black post. Your resonating line goes to the red post, and you tune it up on the radio. And you will need a tuner for this. You could use the Pocket MFJ QRP tuner. You could buy an Elcraft KX2 that has a tuner built in. You have to be pretty good, though. You got to get that down to a 3-to-1 match for it to tune. Not hard to do, though. So that's my, honestly, my tip is get the best antenna you can throw into a tree. Sorry that I just got here. I'll catch up. Hey, Dennis. Yeah, man. Thank you. I'll give you the thank you right now. Thank you for being a patron. Appreciate it. There you go. 468. Yeah, that's fine. 468, I think, is what Jerry used, and I think the book used a different number. To be honest with you, honestly, gosh, I should, I can almost, I need to make a standalone video on this. You need to get yourself an antenna tuner. Yeah. So, always err on the side of having too much metal. Always err on the side of having too much metal. So, make that length as long as possible. Make that wire as long as possible. And then connect, ooh, look at this magic. Connect it to this guy and tune it to the frequency that you want using an antenna tuner. It'll graph it. It'll give you this U-shaped parabola, an upside-down parabola. And the U-shape is showing you where the lowest feed point impedance is, the lowest SWR. And then you're just going to start walking it in, walking the length of that wire, whatever it is, a vertical, the radials, a dipole. Just start walking it in until you get to the point that you're at a really good resonant spot. Oh, Tom Garcia asked a tough question. What gauge wire would you need to use to transmit 100 watts? Is there speaker wire thick enough? I think you should be close to 12 gauge or 10 gauge wire would be my recommendation. My recommendation. In what units is RF feed line loss usually expressed? Ohms? Oh, feed line loss is decibels per 100? Yeah. See, I remembered stuff. Decibels per 100 feet. Ohms is impedance, the matching of the antenna, but the loss, the RF loss through the coax cable is in decibels, dBs. What must be done to prevent standing waves on an antenna feed line? What's a standing wave? SWR. What causes an SWR off-kilter ratio? A poor match. Okay. The antenna feed point must be at DC ground potential. The feed line must be cut to a length equal to an odd number of electrical quarter wavelengths. The feed line must be cut to a length equal to an even number of physical half wavelengths. The antenna feed point impedance must be matched to the characteristic impedance of the feed line. Perfect. Done. There you go. That's an easy one. You did, whoa, okay, hold on. I Love Laser says he did 100 watts on 20 gauge. Then, yeah, go to town with the speaker wire. I think your only problem with the speaker wire is that you're terminating into a BNC connector at the radio. You're not running through any coax. That's, so 20 gauge, 100 watts is pretty good. That's pretty awesome. I'll be honest with you. I always err on the side of being safer rather than sorry. I have no problem spending a chunk of cash on wire. So if you can do 100 watts on 20 gauge, that's awesome. Thanks for the correction. I will try that. Frequency divided by 0.39, the correct answer. Awesome! Joe Wilson, 10 internet points for you. He says frequency divided by 0.39 is the correct answer for ground radials. Awesome. And the more you have, the better it's going to behave. But have them in at least one. And then pairs. If the SWR on an antenna feed line is 5:1 and a matching network at the transmitter end of the feed line is adjusted to 1:1 SWR, what is the resulting SWR on the feed line? 1:1. No? Wait. Why was that? Okay, now I gotta read this one. 5:1. Okay. Oh, because it doesn't change anything.
The tuner does not tune the antenna.
If the SWR on antenna feed line is 5:1 in the matching, what is the resulting SWR on the feed line? Yeah, it's 5:1. I trip myself up on these questions. The FCC will do that. They'll ask you ridiculous questions just to trip you up. Don't drink beer before you take the hold on. Don't drink beer when you go take your test. Somebody, Blue Flyer says, oh God, tell me the difference between a modulator on a leaner. A leaner? Oh, please. Okay. The Hillomost LLC LW8 series was the one I used. Oh, okay, cool. Awesome. What standing wave ratio would result when connecting a 50-ohm feed line to a non-reactive load having 20-ohm impedance? Would that... Oh, 200-ohm. 4-to-1? Yeah, 4-to-1. That's just a simple division. What standing... Oh, it's going to be one of those. What standing wave ratio... I have to do simple math. 5-to-1. 50 standing... Okay, see... I'm getting ahead of myself. This is where you get in trouble. Take your time. Again, I will repeat the moniker that the first person who comes up with a tattoo that says, once you get to 75%, go take the test, you get 100 internets. What standing wave ratio will result when connecting a 50 ohm feed line to a non-reactive load having 10 ohm impedance? 5-to-1. D. There you go. What standing wave ratio will result when connecting a 50-ohm feed line to a non-reactive load of 50-ohm impedance? 1-to-1, baby. That's what you want. See, these are all just math at this point. I'll just knock these out. What standing feed line result when connecting a 50-ohm feed line to a non-reactive load having a 25-ohm impedance? 2-to-1, baby. Yeah, I can do the math. I can do fractions. What standing wave ratio will result when connecting a 50-ohm feed line to an antenna that has a purely resistive 300-ohm feed line impedance? 6-to-1. There you go. I can math. What is the interaction between high standing wave ratio and transmission line loss? I believe there's none. There is no interaction between transmission line loss and SWR. Okay. If the transmission line is lossy, high SWR will increase the loss. That may be true. High SWR makes it difficult to measure transmission line loss. You don't need to... Okay. High SWR reduces the relative effect. High SWR reduces the... No, that's not true. High SWR makes it difficult to measure the transmission of the loss. So, okay, this is a good one. I don't know this. I don't remember this one. This question pool changed when I took my general, by the way. Since then. I'm an old time general. Not that old. What is the interaction between high standing wave? There is B. If a transmission line is lossy, high SWR will increase the loss. I like that one. We'll try it. Ah! Fan TV. 10 internets. What is the effect of transmission line loss on SWR measured at the input to the line? What is the... Okay. The higher the transmission line loss, the more SWR will be read artificially low. Great line, great line, great line, Franklin says. All right, hold on. How many do we have here? 15. Oh, we're almost done. This is the last question. And then we'll try. The higher the transmission line loss, the more accurate the SWR measurement will be. Transmission line loss does not affect the SWR. The higher the transmission line loss, the more SWR read artificially high. I want to go with B. No! Then it's A? Yeah, it's A. Anyways, A or B. The higher the transmission line loss, the more SWR read artificially low. Yeah, I guess that's true because you're artificially grounding it. Okay. All right, so we're done with that. Let's go back to the radio. Radio, as my kids say. All right, shoot, Franklin. Shoot. Shoot me them RFs. I don't think the attenuator is going to help this, but... Attenuators don't really help on 20 meters and above. 7 meters and below help, though. Shooter! Franklin, are you trying? Yeah, Tom, I saw your post. I wasn't able to comment on it because I was getting ready for the stream. But I saw that you hit 75% on extra, man. Good luck, dude. Good luck. It would seem like less power is being reflected back. Yeah, because it's lossy. It makes total sense. So what he's saying is the feed line being lossy, you're going to get less SWR coming back because, or appear to come back because it's getting out. It's lossy. It's losing it in the moment. You can't ever let it go. You only get one shot to make a QSO with Franklin. Why is my camera constantly not losing? Constantly losing focus. This is really bothering me. Yeah, that's crispy. Okay, I can't hear you, Franklin. I'm going to try. Let me get my mic out of here. All right, here we go. CQ, CQ, CQ for Kilo India 6, November Alpha Zulu. CQ for Kilo India 6, November Alpha Zulu. CQ, CQ, CQ for Kilo India 6, November Alpha Zulu. CQ for Kilo India 6, November Alpha Zulu. Oh! I can't tell if that's you or that's noise. I've got two lawn chairs on the roof. That's all I have for an antenna right now. I apologize. Can't make the QSOs with you. Nope, sorry. So if you're listening on HF and you're not hearing me or you are hearing me, make sure you post your QTH, your location, so I know where you're at. Because that's really the only thing that's helpful. You're basically acting like reverse beacons. Patrick, the key to SWR questions is if you're hooking up larger connected to smaller or smaller connected to larger, 50 ohm to 10 or 10 to 50, you use larger to smaller for the ratio. Sure. No. Thank you, Tom, but no, the patrons are already doing enough. They bought the third camera and can I show you this? I'll show you. We're going to turn this around right now. They bought me my fuzzy blue pop filter. That's very nice. Things like that, man. I appreciate that. That's helping a lot. Making the quality of the streams a lot better. All right. Okay, so basically we covered the questions. The antenna questions are fairly easy. They're fairly straightforward, and a lot of them are just fractional math. So that's awesome. If anybody wants to QSO with Franklin on that frequency, go for it. Franklin, you can use that frequency to your heart's content. All right, so I've got a couple things. Oh, let me check APRS really quick. I wanted to do that to see if we got any messages. Ooh, oh, I just lost my Gengar. Come here, Gengar. You can be... sit there right now. All right, so here's my FT2DR. So we're going to go to FW, message list, and I don't have anything. I don't have anything. Wow. Hunter, I didn't get your message. Sorry about that, buddy. You tried to contact me, and you worked me before on APRS, and I think you also worked me on this radio, but not now. And there's nothing that should have been different. This radio is connected to a 17-foot, 2-meter antenna on my roof, which is a very nice antenna. I'm very happy with it, so I apologize for that. Okay. And let's do that now. Okay. Want to say thank you to the patrons. We saw Carrie earlier, Michael Nieswender, Terry Hines, Jason Brown, Ken Neiman, the Brew Crew, of course. Cheers to all you fine people. Thank you so much for what you do. Jason Siebert, Mike Gatz, Gareth Broadhead, Franklin Lewis, Danny Miller, Von Dobbs, Chris Ebert. I hope I'm saying Ebert correctly. And David Dansereau. I believe that's correct. Please correct me if I'm wrong. And Dennis Dunderdale. Very, very awesome that you guys are helping out there. I appreciate that. And everybody's helping out. just by watching this. If you can, give me a thumbs up. I really appreciate it. That really does help more than you know. I posted, so here, let me put this out there for the 65 people that are watching right now. If you're not already on the Ham Radio Crash Course, please go join. There's a link to the Patreon, and actually there's a link to the Patreon in the description. I'm not trying to make you a patron, but I posted the June newsletter open to the public because it's about field day. And, oh, Dennis is spelled with one, oh, I apologize. Damn, did I, oh, you got me. This is why I bring my wife in. Oh, Dennis, I'm sorry. I worked with my father-in-law's name, Dennis Two Ends, and I worked with a guy named Dennis Two Ends. I apologize. I'm sorry. I will fix that after the chat. So the newsletter is out on Patreon right now. You can go look at it. And it's about field day, and it's about station grounding. So I know at least Tom will want to go read that if he hasn't. I tried APRS twice tonight. Tom, did you try to message me twice tonight? You tried to message me twice tonight. Because that is not good if that's the case. That. This baby was chugging on APRS. What's going on here? I'm a little bit bummed out about that. If you come back. Oh, that's not good. Okay, well, then I apologize. And you're using KI6NAZ7? You did the dash 7? Hope you did the dash 7. Well, actually, I hope you didn't do the dash 7, because that'll mean I'm not screwed up. anyway, check out the newsletter and go read the article on field day. That's my plans for field day. I will be doing a live stream, a large live stream, the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday. That's my plan. And I message you too, or at least tried. Well. I'm a little bothered that I'm not getting those messages. Because I got a big booming antenna on too. That's a bummer. Sorry about that. I will look into that and we'll get it sorted out for the next time. But yes, please do go look at the newsletter if you haven't already. And did not use the dash 7. Oh, you have to use the dash 7. Sorry. It's KI6. It's just like in the lower right-hand corner there. KI6NAZ-7. You have to put the dash 7 in. Otherwise, it will not go. Yeah, please look at the newsletter. Tell me what you think about it. Post in the Facebook. Post on the Reddit. Post on the Patreon. Wherever you want, just post. Findu shows messages to K7. Okay, well, maybe it just didn't get to me yet. I'll have to wait, I guess. But it should have already made it. Okay, we're wrapping it up. I appreciate that. I'm going to hop over on Discord and we'll talk for a little bit. I have a kind of an early night because I have an interview after this. Somebody wants to talk to me about other stuff. Not just ham radio stuff, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, not an interview like job, but, you know, internet stuff. Anyway, okay, thank you guys. Love you much, and we will talk again soon. Take it easy. See ya.